Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Are You Not Kentertained? Today is August 7th, 2017. This is episode 60-something, probably 67. That's my best guess, maybe 66. I didn't prepare properly. Anyways, it's a Monday. We just saw Game of Thrones yesterday. Chris is here. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad, man. I feel like every episode I do with you becomes more like episode 69 than 60-something else. So.
Yeah, I'm currently looking to see which episode we're on. I mean, not that anybody really cares about the number, but, you know, just for my own personal knowledge, it would be nice. Let's see. Here we go. This is episode 66. Yay. So, we had another riveting episode of Game of Thrones. This has to go down as the most exciting, fast-paced season ever so far. Would you not agree with that?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. The only one that even came close, I would say, would be this. We're having as much action in this season so far in the first half as we have in like the last two episodes of the last couple seasons. You know, like the battle for the wall, the battle for the bastards, the hard home, blah, 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 blowing up the Sept of Baelor shit. And that's all happening in the front half. So the second half is leaving me with a lot of hope.
Yeah, yo, I would say the beginning of season six had a lot of big deaths. So I'm going to compare a little bit to that, only jacked up on a little HGH or something. I don't know. But certainly a interesting, fast-paced season. I know what everybody wants us to talk about, which means that we're going to leave that to the end. We're going to go in chronological order. So, if all you want to do is hear about us talk about a dragon getting stabbed with a spear, fast forward to about, 80% mark of this podcast, then you'll hear it, okay? Otherwise, just sit back, enjoy, and listen to Chris and I blather on about, you know, the rest of the episode. So, we start off with Jaime and Bronn. Bronn had his first major appearance of the season. He finally got some lines. We got to talk with Dickon, and Bronn was not happy with the Scrooge McDuck bag of gold there. He wants Highgarden. I agree with him. What'd you think about the scene?
I think that Bronn was looking for Scrooge's number one lucky dime. a couple things came through. First of all, yay, more Bronn time. Secondly, good job to Nikolai Coster-Waldau for being able to convey, you know, the shit that we know he's going through with Jaime without coming off as being melodramatic or a dick or what have you in regards to it. You know, I was like a fairly nuanced presentation. In addition, which I'm pretty sure kind of rhymed back with the books, but it's been so long I don't really remember. I like the fact that, like, Dickon, as he called him,
it was such a good line, yeah.
wasn't just a complete total ass. Like, I could see him almost being like, Sam, I have to beat you because Dad is making me, but I don't want to do it, but I still have to. So, rather than just being like the kind of guy who would pick on his fat brother just to pick on his fat brother.
Yeah, I wish we would have gotten to know Dickon a little bit more earlier, but there was never a really huge rhyme or reason to, but it would have been nice. He's like a character that probably could have had some fascinating story had we learned about him in season two or something, but whatever. You brought up the dude who plays Jaime, and, you know, I'm really starting to feel that he, out of anybody, has the most acting ability. Like, he portrays his character better than just about anybody on the show, if not the best out of anybody. Would you not agree with that?
I would say all of the Lannister siblings are really up there. I mean, just Tyrion. I mean, look how much Peter Dinklage made you fall in love with a character who was, you know, pretty much a dick for the first couple seasons. You know, not to say that, you know, not to say that, like, in a negative way, but, you know, he was an asshole, he was a dick, he was sarcastic, he had to manipulate people to get what he wanted. So, I mean, kudos to him. Kudos to Nikolai for making a character who, I mean, pushed an 8-year-old out of a fucking roof to kill him so he wouldn't be told on for having an incestuous affair with his sister, and making him a sympathetic character down the road. Good job with him. And the same thing to Lena Headey, making, you know, Cersei is such a, pardon my language, a cunt, and making you root for her in some scenes, hate her in most of the scenes, but I mean, just good job there. As much as I don't want to knock, you know, like anybody on the show, like there are a lot of people like Kit Harington, kind of one note, not a bad Jon Snow, but you know, he's definitely going to have to go through some drama lessons before he's, you know, winning an Oscar, put it that way.
I agree with that. I also think, and he's gotten better every season. I don't know. I don't have the list of names up, but the dude who plays Littlefinger always has some of the greatest facial expressions. He doesn't even have to say hardly anything during a scene, but his facial expressions are always spot on, and I always enjoy that with him.
I want to say I think his name is like Aidan Gillen or something like that.
You're right. And
I really feel like he was a Shakespearean actor before he, you know, hit this shit up. Like, I could definitely see him playing like Iago in fucking Othello and like just nailing that part, which he pretty much is in, excuse me, Game of Thrones. So,
yeah, I agree with that. Anything else to be had from this opening scene? Do you think Bronn's ever going to get a castle? Ever?
I think if he survives the next episode, he definitely fucking deserves one, but that's going to come in later on down the podcast.
Yeah, I have so much to say. So many emotional feelings towards the end of that involving Bronn, but we'll get to it. So this is like a to be continued. Now, after that, we had Cersei talking with the banker. It wasn't that big of a scene. I mean, it was an important scene, but it wasn't that big. Do you think we're ever going to see Ilaria ever again? Or do you think, like, last episode just set the tone, we're just not going to see their fate?
Well, you know, I was able to not see any spoilers for last night's episode before I watched it this morning because I had to work last night. But one of the things that I unfortunately did see over the course of the week, because like you put on your Facebook thing, people just like to fucking post any Game of Thrones shit they see, was Ilaria saying, that's it. You know, she might not be dead, but you're not going to see her again. So Cersei's revenge is pretty much complete at this point in regards to her character. Whether the woman was lying or not, who knows? But I don't think we'll be seeing her anymore.
I can't help but to feel just slightly ripped off. I would have enjoyed seeing the scene where Ilaria watched Tyene die. It didn't even have to be more than a minute or two, but I would have enjoyed Cersei standing there watching as it happened. You have that little smug smile of hers. I would have simply enjoyed that scene, and like I said, it could have only been a minute or two, but it would have added to the rage that people feel towards Cersei. So I feel a little ripped off, basically. Do you feel ripped off?
I don't feel ripped off so much as I think that if what the actress was saying is true, is just something that could have added some flavor, but when you put it up against what you need to show to convey the rest of the story going forward with the limited amount of time they have left, okay, we'll axe that. We've got the gist across with what happened in episode 3, so.
Yeah, and this, I mean, I think I've complained about this every week, but this whole pressure and only so many episodes go, I think it's allowing a lot of people to nitpick the shit out of things instead of just being like, hey, this is cool. Like, everybody's happy with what's going on, but simultaneously, every week, I'm sitting there like, well, fuck, I wish they would have slowed this down a little bit. I would have liked maybe, like, the flow from seasons 4 and 5. There was a nicer flow to it. It wasn't so rushed, and it told stories, and now we're not getting the full story that we would have because it's rushed. Just my opinion.
I think we're getting about the same amount that we always knew we would have. I mean, one thing is that these guys aren't as stupid, and they know exactly what they want to convey. So I think realizing that the budget was going to be increased for these episodes and axing the less important parts while delivering the action that they knew they were going to have to produce on for years and years and years, let them pick and choose where to excise. And, you know, I mean, we've seen it in certain characters that never made it in from earlier seasons. And again, I mean, too, you're asking all these actors. I mean, I know a lot of them had nothing going on at all before Game of Thrones came out, but you're asking them to basically put on the rest of their careers on hold for, what, 8 years? 10 years? Possibly, if it goes to 2019? So, yeah, I mean, it's easy to see that the longer they stretch a series like this, the more conflicts they're going to have, the less opportunity they're going to have, the less filming chances they're going to have. So, I'm thinking they pretty much know what they need to do to do it right. I mean, look at it. We're talking about it on a podcast. I mean, I've never done that for any other TV show that I've seen. So, there you go.
You know, would you say that you're better off having a role where, you know, you're on for 4 seasons, so you make a name for yourself, then you have that big death? I don't know who to use as an example. We'll say the dude who played Hodor. Like, are you better off doing that, or are you better off having a character like Jon Snow? Well, not like Jon Snow, he's the main guy, but like somebody who's been around the whole time, basically, but may not be like... Jon Snow was such a shitty example.
Look at Littlefinger, for example.
Yes, okay, we'll use Littlefinger, or Varys. Varys, for fuck's sakes. Is it better to have that 4-season stretch, get killed off, have your moment in the sun, and be able to move on to other projects? Or is it better to be Varys, start episode 1, and last, hopefully, through the whole show?
I think, overall, if you have a memorable part for the shorter seasons, it works out better than having somebody have a relatively minor part. I mean, look at Varys. I mean, he's a part, but he goes stretches where there'll be episodes where he won't be in it at all. So you still can't take up necessarily other projects in that, because you're going to have to go only weeks between filming. But you're also not going to be, you know, one of the headliners, one of the main names that everybody's going to be remembering, like Kit Harington or Emilia Clarke or Nikolai Coster-Waldau, for another one who wasn't, you know, in anything before Game of Thrones, and now he's in, what, like 17 different Netflix-only things and comedies, and I see him in trailers and stuff. Littlefinger, I was going to say, never saw him before Game of Thrones. I've seen him in at least a couple of things now, and while he's not one of the huge major players throwing around in every scene, he's one of those people who's, you know, been through the long haul, and he's in at least a couple episodes every season to spice things up. I don't know. I mean, I think anybody who's on this show has to be just grateful to have been on it and be able to drop the Game of Thrones bomb when they're doing auditions or putting on their resume in the future.
I remember sitting in the theater watching Dark Knight Rises and seeing Aidan Gillen in the very opening scene on the airplane there. And I was like so excited just to see that. So I think that was Batman, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Whew. Didn't want to sound like a complete freaking idiot here. So yeah, it's, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I think of Michael Rooker on The Walking Dead, where his character was written off after the first season. Then he makes his comeback in season 3, and he lasts till season 4. Like, in the meantime, he was still, like, not, like, top guy, but he was always getting roles, and now, I mean, with success of Guardians of the Galaxy, for instance, he's done good for himself. So, it's a tough one. It's interesting.
I mean, going with Michael Rooker, though, I mean, he's never been, like, a huge Hollywood name, but he's always been consistent. I mean, think back to Henry Portrait of the Serial Killer. That was in, what, 1988?
Such a good movie.
That was, what, 15, 20 years before Walking Dead came out on TV?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I remember one of the first things I saw him in was friggin', Mallrats. You know, when he got the stink hand from Jason Lee.
Like, I think probably one of the first things I saw him in was Tombstone. And, yeah, Tombstone was probably the first thing, but he was in Cliffhanger. And did you know he filmed a film right on the Great Sacandaga Lake?
No, which movie are you talking about?
It's called, I think it's called Hypothermia. It was a horror movie with one of the shittiest looking monsters you will ever see. But if you can get your hands on it, it's a delightful film.
I believe, I remember they filmed a movie called Out of the Rain in Johnstown. Like the main house was about three houses down from my aunt's house where I was living at the time. And then they used the carousel in Caroga Lake for, like, the ending. And, you know, it was such a big deal when they were filming it. And then I see, you know, years later, they do The Place Beyond the Pines with an actual, like, all-star cast, and they film that, you know, right in Schenectady. I was like, holy shit, you know, I got Out of the Rain. They got Place Beyond the Pines. How was that fair?
Yeah, that was a pretty big, I never saw the movie, but I've heard really good things, so I actually feel regretful that I haven't seen that movie yet, as a matter of fact. One last question, not really necessarily about the scene, but we were talking about the writers, directors, producers, all that. Have you heard anything about their new project after Game of Thrones, which is called Confederate, and are you looking forward to it at all?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything about it. I'm not sure. I'll have to see what it's about. I mean, a lot of what I watch in TV is typically genre fare compared to, you know, the more mainstream stuff that appeals to everybody else. But, you know, I think, I want to say, what have these guys done before Game of Thrones?
Well, I was just looking up David Benioff, and he actually was a writer on one of my favorite films, which was 25th Hour. He was a writer for Troy, X-Men Origins Wolverine, which I will defend to my dying day, so don't care. So he's done writing before, just stuff that I never had heard of him. He did Brothers, did an episode of Always Sunny in Philly. So, I mean, he has some experience in Confederate. Just quick explanation, it sounds like Civil War, South won, there's still slavery in modern day society. That's what it sounds like. I'm kind of excited for it. But it could turn out good, could turn out bad, who knows. I don't know if anybody's attached to it yet, aside from those two gents.
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, a lot of that's going to depend on who they cast. Is it going to be on HBO?
Yes. So they'll have the budget. I mean, I think the big thing with Confederate is that they're, I don't know about you, but I think that they're probably going to need to attach at least one or two names of people that, you know, casual society actually knows. Versus Game of Thrones could live off the book. Like, people already knew what the fuck it was. This, I really think they're going to need a couple of names to draw fans more in, maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah, because, I mean, while Game of Thrones was critically received and it sold really well, I mean, the easiest way to sell it when it came out was be like, hey, here's, you know, Lord of the Rings with a bunch of sex, and, you know, nobody's safe. It was easy to compare it to something. Well, I mean, that Confederate might be kind of a touchy subject in just looking at the synopsis I was seeing a second ago, and the current day that we're sitting in our country.
With the racial climate going on, yeah, it's going to be a fun fucking time. I can't wait to see the outrage. They've got to nail it spot on, or else there's going to be some kind of social outcry. Let's face it, that's the society we live in where, let's face it, we're finding out more and more people that we thought were friends and were cool are fucking racist as hell. So, like, that's going to be a weird time.
Yeah, it sounds like it could potentially be like another alternate version of Man in the High Castle kind of deal.
Right. And that was the comparison I was going to make, but I chose not to because my memory sucks. Yay. let's go back to the actual show here. We had the Littlefinger and Bran talk. I don't know. Is Littlefinger just trying to gain favor with Bran, or was he trying? Like he discussed how, you know, he would have taken a knife for Catelyn. Do you think he was just trying to get favor from Bran, or do you actually believe Littlefinger would have actually taken a knife for Catelyn?
I think Littlefinger is the kind of person who can mean everything that he says the moment he says it, and then just completely disregard it as soon as it's fucking out of his mouth. So I think that when he says, "I would have taken a knife for Catelyn," he believes it. And I think he would have stabbed the shit out of Catelyn if it had been in his benefit to do so. Which obviously was, because he was one of the people who betrayed knowledge of the shit that was going on with the Starks to the Lannisters, and which set up the whole fucking Boltons in the North. Yeah, he's definitely trying to curry favor everywhere he fucking can. You know, Bran might be able to have some position and status in Winterfell. Let me get in with him. Sansa definitely has some. Let me try to get in with her as I try to get in her. Jon Stark obviously didn't work out for me so well, so we're going to write him off as a loss and see if we can get him killed. Now that Arya's back, maybe we can fuck around with her a little bit. So.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's a third straight podcast with Chris in which we have talked about Littlefinger trying to get inside of Sansa. Let's hope that this streak continues until the end of the season. Gosh, the one thing with Littlefinger, and I know he was part of that whole betrayal and everything, there's like this, something that I thought of was, you know how sometimes like, the big bad guys in comic books or whatever, they always have like this one weakness, and like sometimes they actually make it like where it's like a reasonable weakness, like they have such love for somebody that they would be willing to get caught or whatever. I've often wondered if that was partially what they were going for Littlefinger, but it almost feels like I wish Littlefinger wasn't involved in the whole betrayal. I think that would have made his character just a little bit better. But, obviously can't go back and rewrite it. Right after that, Mira came in. She came in and interrupted. Is Bran just being a straight-up dick? Is he just blowing her off? What the fuck is Bran doing? And is Mira just going back home? What do you think?
I would like to see Mira go back home, because it would win an argument that I had with my father, which I'll get into in just a second. I don't think Bran's being a dick so much as he's just being what Bran has become, and what she said is really true. Bran died under that cave up in the north. Now, what is inhabiting the body of Brandon Stark isn't necessarily Brandon Stark anymore. It's what he's been shaped into by the knowledge and everything he's seen, and you know, all the other shit that we haven't seen that's been going on off stage with Bran while we've been seeing what's going on with everybody else. I don't think he's being a dick on purpose. I think he's just becoming more and less than human at the same time.
Now, is it odd, or is there any tie-in to the fact that Uncle Brandon, which he was the guy that saved Mira and Bran, right? Like, he was... That was his name, right? Brandon, the guy on the horse, saved him, right?
Shit. I don't remember, but yes, it was an oracle.
I just wonder, like, how much mystique they want. Like, it seems like damn near everybody in that family has some kind of almost superhuman power, with the exception of Sansa, which I think Sansa's superhuman power is the power to be bland as fuck. Just my opinion here. Rob had the supernatural power of being a complete dumbass. Rickon had... nobody cares about Rickon. Like, fuck him. But, like, everybody else seems to have some cool shit going on for them.
Well, I mean, to be fair to Rob, I mean, imagine if you were a 14-year-old thrust into being a king in charge of all that shit.
I would fail miserably.
And then some hot, like, 17-year-old chick was like, hey, you want to get it on? And... your only other option was to marry, like, some ugly 16-year-old chick. Yeah. I'm pretty sure 90% of the men in this world would make the same mistakes he made, because we think with our dicks instead of with our brains. Bran's uncle was Benjen.
Damn it. Because Brandon was the name of one that got burned by the Mad King or something, right?
Brandon was the name of the Stark ancestor who actually built the wall.
Okay. God damn it. I knew there was a Brandon somewhere. Good to know. Good knowledge. So tell us more about this whole bet with your dad, because that caught my interest, and I think our listeners would love to know.
Let me go back into one thing before that, though. The scene with Bran and Littlefinger shows us that, like what we were talking about last week, he has been watching Littlefinger. He knows what the shit he's been doing, all that stuff that you brought up. So you were right. There you go. You were right, Kent.
It happened once a year, and that was my time, so the rest of the year I'm just taking off from opinions. So
yeah, the whole chaos as a ladder thing was a reference back to something Littlefinger told Varys back in, like, season 3.
So. Yep. I liked this. I like any scene with Littlefinger, though. I fully admit, something about his character has always captivated me, and even... Like, Bran's kind of captivating in his own little weird way now, just because he's not really Bran. Like, he is and he isn't. They said it best in the show and blah, blah. So, I don't know. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. Bet time.
Okay, to get back to the bet. There was a speculation for a long time because, and it almost gained credence, but I watched this shit out of the scene multiple times, back to back to back to back, to prove my dad wrong. But people were speculating for a long time that Mira Reed was actually Jon's sister, and that Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar Targaryen had twins.
I fully believed that, by the way.
And that, so when they were doing the episode with the Tower of Dawn, and Bran was watching the shit play out, you know, and you see that there's a baby already up there. My dad is like, oh, there's two babies. And I've watched it over and over and over and over again, and there's only one baby being held by the wet nurse, and she walks around behind Ned when Ned goes to talk to Lyanna. There's not two babies, there's only one. I literally freeze-framed every second of that scene as it was to prove him wrong, but he still thinks he's right, so...
I don't know. Do you think they could be hiding something in that scene, though? Because, I mean, be it for me to go against everything that you've freeze-framed, but I still like the idea of being two babies.
Well, I mean, at this point, it just becomes the fact, like, why do we know nothing about it? It would almost be just, you know, like, oh, here's a shock just for the sake of a shock. It would be like leaving out the character of Daenerys' other brother, which they've done from the books, you know, who's the rightful king in the series, and throwing him in, you know, in what would be three seasons after he was introduced in the books, you know, and people would be like, where the fuck is this guy coming from? He's just out of left field at this point.
Sort of like if they brought in Lady Stoneheart this late in the game, it would just be
exactly.
Kind of
you'd be like, all right, there's been nothing, you know, somebody who hasn't read the books or who hasn't really been following along with all of the media that goes alongside of the show, just watching the show, it'd be, you know, like a deus ex machina out of nowhere. I mean, there's never been anything shown in the show to hint that Mira's anything other than just, you know, Jojen's sister, somebody who went to help Bran because, you know, her brother was having visions that Bran needed help. I mean, literally, too, we've never really seen her father other than that flashback in the past, so it's not like these are main characters that, you know, you could have been seeing, oh, okay, yeah, he's helping Ned hide this secret so that Robert didn't kill these people. You know. I could be wrong. You know, she could come out of nowhere. She could be sitting on the fucking Iron Throne by the end of the show, but I really just feel like that would be a cheat based upon what they've shown us in the show so far.
Well, I for one hate your logic. You bring me down. You brought me down last week by telling me Gendry's not coming back, and I've came to the conclusion, and I agree with you, and now I'm probably agreeing with you on this, and you're just... Figure out something else to bring me down with next week, okay, Chris? Just figure it out.
My mom was hearing some rumors that, you know, they're going to bring Gendry back because now they have all this Dragonstone. They're going to need a blacksmith to forge it into weapons.
I've heard that for a while, and
so, I'm trying to make you happy, Kent, without destroying your hopes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to hold out hope until the final frame of this of the franchise. And after that, I'll cry myself to sleep a little bit. That's okay.
All right, here, I'll make a prediction right now. If Arya Stark survives, Gendry will show up, and she'll ride off into the sunset with him instead of dealing with any kind of the politics or bullshit that sits around afterwards.
This actually, including John Stark. I know you don't always like to include John Snow in the Stark discussion. God damn it! Between him, Sansa, Arya, and Bran, how many of them do you see making it to the final scene of the franchise?
I would say three. I really think Arya is going to die. But I hope she doesn't. I like her as a character. I think Bran will still be around, but I don't think he'll be Bran. I think he'll be firmly ensconced underneath some war tree, you know, in a pit, looking like a young version of what's-his-face from last season. With maybe some children of the forest, if any, are left alive, frolicking around him. I think Sansa and Jon will still be around.
Yeah, I would guess of anybody, despite I a long time ago I really thought Sansa was going to get got, but that just doesn't seem to be the plan. The only person I can really see, I don't know, I've talked myself out of Arya, I think Jon's the most likely. Last week I think we talked about the whole penultimate episode where some big character gets that big death. If I had to place a wager right now, I would say it could very well be Jon Snow. I'm hoping not, but that's just my crazy wager at the time. Speaking of Arya, we had Arya meeting with the guards, them just being complete dicks, and then Arya and Sansa had their great little hug it out. Sansa acting kind of like a bitch, being like, no, bitch, it is Lady Stark. And then them complaining about how the statue looked. Take what you want from that and go.
It was a pretty good scene. I think my favorite was when Sanya was like, who's all on your list of names?
That was like, at first she was like laughing about it, and then like later on when she was talking with, when they were with Bran, and Bran's like, yeah, I know about your list, and Sansa's like, the fuck? This bitch has a list, really? Like, that was actually a really well-done thing, how they did that, so.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I enjoyed, too, the guards. I mean, it's nice every once in a while to get a little bit of humor in the series, you know, that doesn't have to come off as too grimdark all the time. And it was, it's always nice, too, to see, how shitty the common folk have it. Like, well, if I'm not telling her, if I fucking tell her and it's not fucking Arya, what's going to happen to me? You know, kind of bullshit.
Yeah, a little humor now and then really goes a long way, and I guess that's really why I missed the Hound, but we'll talk about that later. I don't know. I liked it. I was happy for everybody involved. Obviously, I was proven wrong that Arya was not the lady that gave taught to Cersei last week. See, I told you, I get one thing right a year. So, I don't know. All in all, I was happy. That led to the Arya, Bran, and Sansa thing, which we kind of touched on. Was there any significance? There has to be significance of Bran giving Arya the dagger.
Well, yeah, now she's one of the five or six people who we know have a weapon that can kill White Walkers, besides, you know, the Dragonglass shit.
And since, you know, you're the all-knowing person here, Chris, Care to tell us everybody that you know of that has one? I know a few, but I'm going to miss a few. I know that.
John Jamie Van, has one, right? Jamie, Arya. Give me a second. I saw something just talking about that. And Sam. So John, Brienne, Jamie, Sam, and Arya.
I forgot. See, Sam is the one I absolutely would have forgotten.
Yeah, because he stole his dad's right before he took off last season.
Now, didn't... And this is where I'm going to feel foolish. Didn't somebody's sword get, like, melted down and made into two weapons?
Yes. They're dead. Ned's big fucking giant sword, the one that he used in the executions in the first episode.
Okay, yes.
That was just made out of Valyrian steel. And after he got murdered with it, you know, they used it to cut his head off. They melted it down, and they made Joffrey a sword, and they made Jaime a sword. Jaime carries Joffrey's now, and Jaime gave his to Brienne when she went to leave after she saved his life and got him back to King's Landing in order to try to make the exchange for Sansa for him, you know, back in season two or whatever.
See, like, people are listening to this right now, munching on some popcorn, going, oh yeah, I remember that. That's great. So, see, we're jogging some people's memories here. Did we gain anything else from... Bran is, like, this guy now that, you know, he's got all this info. How much info is he holding back? Like, does... We know that he only sees certain things. How... Is he holding back info from others, or does he not know how to quite navigate his way yet?
I think it's a little of both. He showed Littlefinger that he obviously sees more than we've known that he's seen, because, you know, saying I've seen all the fucking plotting and scheming and shit that you do. So I think one of the big things to take from that scene with Sansa, Bran, and Arya is that Sansa warns him, you know, Littlefinger just doesn't give you fucking gifts to without expecting something in return, and, you know, he's a plotter, so he's always thinking about something. At the same time, I think Bran is smart enough not to fuck everything up by going and saying, oh, hey, Jon Snow's a Targaryen, you just made him king. So we'll see. He might have at least a little bit of, you know, politicking humanity left in him, or he might just be, you know, so out there that the effects don't really matter to him anymore. I mean, obviously, he's got to have some kind of game, because he's kind of set up as the counter Night King, what have you, so... he knows that if something doesn't happen, doesn't matter if he's a three-eyed raven, he's not going to be around for too long.
Yeah, Bran, in a lot of people's opinion, is like the most interesting character moving forward, because we kind of have a general idea of where a lot of characters' destinies lie. Bran, we have an idea, but we don't know in which way he's going to fuck everything up. So we're kind of curious about that. Now, do you think at any point Bran either knows or will delve into the past to know of Littlefinger's involvement with the Red Wedding?
I don't know. I mean, Littlefinger obviously, wasn't super involved. Like, he wasn't the cause for it, but his scheming was some of the shit that led, up to the desperation that, Kate and Rob had in order to, make the deal with the Freys in the first place. Like, he didn't actively betray them to her death, but you know, it can be laid at his fault, you know, between playing both sides up to that point. But at the same time, I think part of what we were seeing with Bran and Littlefinger's interaction was Bran saying, I know what you did, but I've got bigger fish to fry, so fuck off and don't bang my sister.
And I'm going to apologize in advance, but rest assured, every week moving forward, Whereas there's going to be some hypothetical brand question, because it's going to keep coming up where it's like, well, does brand know this? Does brand know that? And nobody has any answers until they actually show it. But I'm still going to ask them. So, you know, play a drinking game or something. Every time I ask a dumb hypothetical brand question, take a shot, people. Yay.
My big question would be, just why did the Raven have three eyes?
Huh. The third eye to see you better with, my dear? I got nothing.
I mean, the dude could warg into anything, could go into the past, but why did the Raven have to have three eyes? And if that's the case, why doesn't Bran have a three-eyed Raven, like, hanging out on his shoulder when he's sitting there under the fucking tree?
I have been wondering why there isn't no Ravens hanging out with him. And then I was also wondering how much power... I don't really think they ever really delved too deep, but, like, how much power did the last three-eyed Raven have? Like, did he control some shit, like, that we don't, like, that was written in the books? How involved was he in the history? Do we know anything, or has he just always been, like, this omnipresent figure that sees shit?
We don't really know, if you go by the books, you don't really know, because Bran's story ends with him getting to the three-eyed Raven. In the books. So we've gone way past, you know, anything that we can reference the books from for this in regards to him. I mean, I would assume that he did more than just watch the past. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of having all that power?
Yeah, I don't know. I think a whole book on, like, I would read a whole book that was about the Three-Eyed Raven. I really would. I think it'd be fucking fascinating, quite frankly. Moving beyond this, we then had John showing Danny the cave. We got to see all the wonderful cave drawings. We got to see the spirals, which I was like, ah, I remember that. And then, of course, after the episode, they talked about how they'd already showed the spirals and all that shit. Give me your thoughts on that scene, and more importantly to the women listeners, is Jon and Daenerys going to have a relationship now?
People have been talking about that for years. I mean, if you go by the way her family does it, it would seem to be, you know, incest is best. But I thought that was a good scene. It shows the two of them actually warming to each other on a personal level rather than just as, you know, two monarchs. It also shows, you know, where the big breakdown is. You know, I believe you and I'll help you, but you still gotta swear loyalty to me, and, you know, how can I do that and maintain the loyalty of my subjects at the same time? I thought it was relatively well done between the start of the scene with Danny and Miss Andy, where she's like, what kind of things did you and Grey Worm do?
That part was funny, yeah.
All the way up through, you know, the scene a little bit later on when John and Davos are talking to Miss Andy, you know, and she's like, well, how come your last name was Snow and your dad's last name was Stark? And he's like, I'm a bastard. And, you know, don't they have bastards in wherever she was from? I forgot what the name of the place was. And she's like, we don't even have marriage there, so we don't have the concept of bastards. Or when Davos was asking her, hey, if you wanted to leave, would you just be able to leave, or are you stuck here serving her? She's like, no, I'd be able to leave. And he goes to John, hey, do you mind if I switch sides?
Davos killed it in that scene, and, I mean, we're going to get to it, but, yeah, I actually have something to say about that later on. But, yeah, that whole thing was great. I don't know. If you had to wager a bunch of money, are we going to get the relationship between Danny and John or no?
Maybe. I would bet like $20 on it and not hold out hope of getting it back, but not worry about losing it too much either. Yeah, like I was saying, I think the whole scene went well. She finally blew up on Tyrion for all of the losses that she's had. And yet, when she turns to the person completely outside her circle of advisors for advice, he gives them the same advice that other people have been given, you know, don't be your dad and burn the shit out of everything that you're trying to fucking claim to be a ruler of, you know, so. Maybe she'll take it from John when she wouldn't take it from, you know, everybody else.
Taking it, yes. All right, she will. She may or may not take it, and John may or may not be bending at the knee. Lots of things going on here. I mean,
right now, the easiest way to see it, and this might occur to them down the road, but hey, if we get hook up and get married and you become prince consort or whatever, you can be king in the north and still be subservient to me and pledge your allegiance to me. And now we've got a marriage uniting the north and the dragons against Cersei.
I that's a big thing. Like, Daenerys has no presentation knowledge. Like, she's just like, hey, bend the knee. She's not like trying to like talk him into it in a way that would win over Jon. And quite frankly, I kind of want to punch or at least backhand Daenerys every time she asks him to bend at the knee at this point. Like, stop it. When everything's done. I wonder
if she's, like, getting ready to peg him or something.
It's like, you know what? After the war is done, if you know, everybody's still on good terms, ask him. And if he's down with you ruling and wants, you know, don't bother right now. Just have a working relationship where you're both working for the common good, but no, keep asking about fucking bending at the knee. It's like a bitch that keeps wanting to get married, like keeps like dropping hints to the guy, like, hey, my friend just got an engagement ring, where's mine? Like, just stop. Daenerys is acting so needy right now, it's kind of bordering on pathetic. I had to say it because I just don't like her.
I think a lot of that has, though, been built up by all of the people who have been around her for so long. I'm just telling her, hey, we're going to go back and take over the Seven Kingdoms because they're ready for a Targaryen ruler and they're all unhappy with everything that's been going on, and you're going to show up and everybody's going to love you because you're the mother of dragons and the breaker of chains. And then she gets there and she's like, what do you mean? I'm not universally loved, and this is what people have been telling me for the last 6 years, is that I'm going to show up and you guys are all just going to drop to your knees and fucking worship me.
It's like a, you know, getting out of school and having that rude awakening of, like, living on your own, and all of a sudden, like, oh, shit, it's hard all of a sudden. So
I could compare it to, like, this wasn't me, because I wasn't that person, but being, like, the star fucking high school quarterback, and everybody's telling you, oh, you're amazing, you're so good, and then you get to college, and you're, like, fucking shit on a stick. You know, you're barely able to make the fucking JV squad, for example, or whatever, and you're like, oh, yeah, back home, I was fucking the bomb, but here I'm, you know, just a little fish among a whole bunch of other big fish. Now I have to figure out what my relationship to the world is while still maintaining that arrogance that you had back at home.
Yeah, it's a very good analogy and very apt. I don't know. Honestly, the best part of that whole scene for me was the drawings on the wall, but I'm always a big fan of stuff like that. So that was my take on it. I admit that I really didn't even see any quote-unquote connection between the two, and then as soon as, like, the episode was over, like, everybody's talking about this relationship thing, I'm like, I'm glad I didn't see that that way, and I'm going to stick to my blind ignorance. Moving on, and we alluded to this already, Dany being all kinds of bitchy at Tyrion. Does Tyrion hold some blame in this, or is it? I don't even want to say do we have to blame somebody, but does Tyrion hold some blame? Does Daenerys hold some blame for not going in there and just fucking shit up to begin with? Like, you know, I keep saying she should have. Who should be getting the blame?
I really don't think anybody should be getting the blame. This is just war. Shit happens that you can't control. I mean, if we really want to throw around some blame at fucking Joffrey and Cersei, listen to Tyrion way back in the day, there would never be an invasion. Joffrey would be a fucking king in power, and they wouldn't have ever, you know, Ned might have been dead, but they wouldn't necessarily have lost the North. They wouldn't have lost, you know, the West with Highgarden when they went with Renly back in the day. They wouldn't have lost the South. They would have been able to maintain the Seven Kingdoms, but they didn't want to listen to him because Cersei hated his fucking guts, and so look what happened. You ended up in this state of flux. I mean, yeah, Drogon fucked a bunch of shit up later on in the episode, but the real fucking reason that they were able to take care of anything was the fact that the Dothraki were there. And, you know, you could be the fucking best horseman in the world, but you go up against, you know, a fucking fort and you have to commit a siege, your horses don't mean anything anymore at that point. So, yeah, it would have been nice for her to have tried to go right into King's Landing and take everything, but I have a feeling it would have been worse results than if she was taking her time. And like I said last week, you know, it seemed at the end of episode 3 that Cersei was in power. And I said, you know, something's going to happen in this episode, so it's going to be back to not necessarily square one, but a balancing of the forces, you know, where her gains were offset by her losses. And I think that ended up being proven out to be true in this episode.
One thing you said, and I've been reading that quite a bit, and I just can't agree with it, so I'm going to ask you about it. All right, so the hypothetical has been, if Daenerys goes on the dragon, just burn shit down, you know, a lot of people are going to be pissed off at her because it's going to be just like how the Mad King took over. And people are still saying, you know, her path is the right way to go because at the end of the day, if she does take over, the people will love her for the way that she handled it. My thought process is, well, now she's lost Dorne and Highgarden, possibly the Iron Islands, possibly. Like, when you're losing this much territory, I don't know, like, I almost feel like you're better off having done that and been like, well, I got Olenna in Highgarden fully backing me, her people are going to love me, this, you know, people in Dorne are going to love me. At what point does the balance start tipping here? Because I feel the balance has already tipped where Daenerys has fucked herself, in my personal opinion. How do you feel about that?
All right, well, what gives Daenerys her power? Let me ask you this question. Other than the dragons, where's her power derived from?
I would say being able to walk through flames and the Dothraki.
What happens after the war when the Dothraki go home?
I don't know if you send all the Dothraki home. You can send them home and just keep the Unsullied.
She's giving them their war and she's giving them their plunder, but what are the Dothraki going to stay around when all their wives and their herds and their horses are back across the sea?
It's a good question. I don't know.
So at that point, she needs to make sure that she has the support of the kingdoms that she's just basically invaded. You know, some of the old people remember what it was like when the Targaryens were king, but you have a whole generation who's been born who've never had a Targaryen in rule. So coming in, it's going to seem like she's an invader. Doesn't matter what her father or her grandfather or her great-great-grandfather was the people in charge. So if you don't have that base of support built up through making popular decisions and not fucking everybody up, you know, as soon as she sends the Dothraki home or as soon as the Dothraki are like, hey, let us go. We've, you know, came over here. We gave you your war. We put you on the throne. Now it's time to let us take our spoils and head back over across the sea to the Sea of Horses. You know, she's going to be shit out of luck. So I think the people who are saying, hey, you know, don't burn everything down, leave yourself an infrastructure, take the long view, are the ones who are thinking about, yeah, okay, we can get her on the throne, but what's going to keep her on the throne? Rather than just, okay, I can sit on it, but then I'm going to have just as much unrest as Cersei does. Yeah.
Well, isn't that going to be the case? I think that's going to be the case, though, no matter how it goes. Like, I feel like somebody already alluded to it in this episode about how there's always going to be, like, unrest. Somebody made some reference.
I was talking to Jamie.
Okay. Like, I feel like that's the thing, is that there's always going to be people pissed off at you. So I feel that you're looking at it from a glass half full. I'm looking at it from a glass half empty. I see where you're coming from. I'm still saying she should have done what with the dragons and just took down the Red Keep. That's all. Like, I feel she should have done that. We'll see. Like, I'm sure they're going to give us some, like, bullshit end of Return of the Jedi type happy fucking ending at the end, probably. Hopefully C-3PO will be involved. Hopefully.
Knowing our luck, it'll be Jar Jar.
Oh, God damn it, that would piss me off.
Me now, so I want to invent King's Landing.
Please, please, no. You just gave listeners nightmares. We had the great showdown between Arya and Bran, and I would be lying if I said that I just really wanted Arya to kill Bran, because I can't stand her either, but it was nice to see that Arya can just kick all kinds of ass. Was there any other thing to be gained from that scene, other than knowing that Arya is amazing at fighting?
It was a cool scene, but I think it was just a fucking wasted effort. There were so many things I could have taken from that scene that I wasn't sure how to fucking take it. Is she threatening Brienne? Is she really asking for help from Brienne? Is she making Sansa nervous? Is she making Sansa jealous? Is Sansa wanting to learn how to fight now? Or is she looking down at her sister for knowing how to fight? What the fuck was the whole Littlefinger staring down at her with kind of like, I don't know, a pained expression? Or was it a impressed expression? What the fuck was going on with that scene? I don't...
It was tough to figure out whether they were impressed or scared. Those expressions were tough to read.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, as cool as it was to see Arya twirling around, the fact that she's like a 12-year-old little girl, you know, who really skipped out on most of the training that she got. When Brienne kicked her in the chest, I was fucking happy as shit, so.
See, it brought back memories of, I'm probably gonna fuck his name up, Serio Farrell.
Yeah.
It harkened back to that. And at the end, I was really, both times I paid attention to how Sansa reacted. And I just didn't get a very good read on... Sansa almost seemed upset. And when I was trying to write the blog questions this week, I couldn't figure out a way to write a question that made a lot of sense. But I really don't know how to read Sansa's reaction from all that. I get the feeling that she almost feels like, even though she's in control, that she's not in control, kind of. And I don't think she's like... power-hungry, but she's losing grip.
This scene felt like the scene from the first episode with Ed Sheeran, where I was just like, I don't know what they were going for with the scene. What the fuck is the point? There's so much ambiguity in what's going on. I don't know how it's supposed to be taken. Yeah, it's cool to have a freaking good singer in there singing a brand new song, but like the same thing with this. Like, sometimes you can convey whole emotions with just facial gestures, like Jamie did at the beginning when, you know, you can tell he's upset because he just found out his son got murdered by somebody, you know, completely who got off the hook by the way of her death. And sometimes there's just too much in scrutiny in what's actually going on, and you need to have some kind of dialogue to explain what the intention was for that scene. And this scene did not have that. It was cool seeing the twirling and, you know, seeing somebody fuck Brienne up compared to the fact that she won't actually spar with Tormund. So, we'll see.
See, and that's another thing. We've only seen Tormund once all season, I believe. And we need more of that. We need more Tormund. So, hopefully, you would think that we would.
If the preview goes by what it was showing, you know, we might see some of him next week when he said, well, Bran said the vision of them going to Eastwatch by the sea. That's where he sent Tormund and the wildlings to take up a, you know, position at the wall. So,
look at you with your memory. Good for you. I ain't got none of that. But that's exciting. Hopefully Tormund gets some screen time. That'd be exciting. Yeah, I still don't know if there was any rhyme or reason for the scene other than to showcase how far Arya's grown as far as a fighter. But it was fun, just not sure exactly what the point. Hopefully we will have a point, a rhyme and reason by the end of the season why we watched that. Moving on, we had the Davos-John Missandei conversation, which, you know, we've already touched on. I would say my favorite part of that, and there was a lot of things to really love about it. I liked how Davos was like, King Snow? King John? Like, he was so confused on what to call him or refer to him as. And, God, that's why Davos is really one of my top five guys.
It doesn't even matter anyways. Okay, John.
Yeah, he's just so matter of fact, I guess would be a good term to describe him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's why we got to get that fucking power ballad going. I'm going to send a freaking thing into Weiss and Benioff. Fuck Confederate. give me my road trip movie with your three old guys.
Yes, please do. I would love to see it. Do you have anything else that you really want to add to it? I mean, we kind of talked about earlier. Anything else from that scene?
No. I was just, I was really happy with all of the scenes on Dragonstone this week. They worked well, I think, in pushing beyond the shit that we had seen from the previous weeks.
Wait a second. You know what? I completely fucked up here. I completely left out the whole Theon thing. Let's make fun of Theon's expression and go. All
right, so I completely forgot that Jon hated Theon from the beginning because Theon was, you know, fucking making fun of him right from the get-go of his time in Winterfell. Oh, and then I see, I'm like, oh, holy shit, this is going to be rough. And then I was like, oh, yeah, if you hadn't done that for my sister, I'd kill you right now. I was like, yep, I'm surprised Theon isn't peeing himself.
I liked seeing some emotion from Kit Harington there. I really enjoyed it. And since Theon is one of the three most hateable characters for me, like, I just thoroughly enjoyed it. At one point, I thought Theon was just going to get right back in the boat and start paddling back to the bigger boat, because that was great. Props to, I can't think of his real name, but whoever plays Theon there, props to him for his facial
expression. Alfie Allen, Lily Allen's little brother.
Really?
Yeah, that whole song she wrote about Alfie smoking pot all day, that was about Theon.
Well, son of a bitch. All right. Good to know.
Yeah, when he's like, oh, John, I didn't know you would be here.
Well, yeah, I mean, he would never have expected John to be there. That had to have been...
I was just, like, laughing my ass off at that
point. It really was great. We didn't get the Theon trying to rescue Yara, but that does seem to be where they're going with it, right?
Yep, it does seem to be.
So, Theon's going to get his quote-unquote redemption by the end of the season. I think that's going to be a big thing within the next two episodes, it would seem logical, especially since we didn't get no fucking Euron this week, which pisses me off. Just saying, I need to have my weekly dose of Euron. I've become addicted to that gentleman.
Well, at least we got Bronn instead.
And that was a good substitution. No Hound, though. No Hound, no Euron. Like, fuck, man. We better get Hound next week, because we've gone far too long without Hound, and I love the Hound. I just do.
Yeah, I do too. He's good. He's another good actor.
So now we get to the scene that people are actually listening for. They just had to, you know, go through the first hour. But here we are. We're at the big fight scene. Lots of things to take from it. We'll try to break it down a little bit rather than do a whole fucking recap at once here. But obviously, Jaime's army just simply, A, wasn't prepared and just wasn't beastly enough to... Do you think that army could have even handled the Dothraki without the dragon being involved?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, one of the things that I don't think we saw based on just budget was the amount of Dothraki. Like, supposedly she brought like 100,000 Dothraki over, which is greater than like all of the armies in Westeros combined. So, yeah, I don't think they could have handled it. I mean, the big thing to take away at the beginning, before the shit started, was the fact that all the gold made it back to King's Landing. So, going forward, Cersei can hire those mercenaries from Braavos that she was talking to and potentially get the Iron Throne off her back. Other big thing to take away is that all the food and supplies that she was going to be laying in store for siege just got fucking roasted to shit. So,
yeah, I felt that was a very important and overlooked aspect. Was, I mean, that was a huge supply that just went up in flames. I liked, one thing I really liked was just the quiet, and then you slowly started hearing the Dothraki coming, and you were like, wow, that's an awesome sound. It's terrifying as hell. I don't know. I thought it was really well done how they did it. The fight itself was fun. I fully admit the whole time I'm sitting there going, if Bronn dies, I'm going to be super pissed off. Now, I didn't want Jaime to die either, but I hold Bronn just like a smidgen higher than Jaime, so I guess that was my priority. Did you think either Bronn or Jaime were possible casualty at this point?
Oh, I thought they were both possible casualties through the entire thing, up until the very ending. And then, you know, as I see Jaime sinking in the water, I'm like, yep, that's right where the fucking credits are going to roll in. And sure enough.
When did he start sinking with all that armor?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's why he was at the end, between the armor and the fucking giant golden hand that he fucking toasts around.
Based on the preview that we saw, I don't retain much of what the preview was for next week, nor did I watch it on my rewatch. Do you think Jamie's on the verge of having to make a very tough decision, do you think? Or do you even think he's going to have an option in or say in anything that happens from this point on? Like, has he lost all say, or does he have an option?
Did we even see whether or not he's still alive or showing up? I mean, what I remember from the trailer for next week is she's talking to the soldiers and saying, you can either bend the knee or you can die. Then John Dragonstone somehow gets word from Bran that he's A, alive, and B, that the Night King's heading to Eastwatch, and then you just saw the Army of the Dead walking. That's all I remember from, like, the 30-second trailer I saw.
I'm going to suggest that, based on... Usually when a big character dies, there's a little bit more than how Jaime's last moments were, so I struggle with the idea...
That seemed to be kind of anticlimactic, but I don't necessarily know if, like, he's been captured, you know, if he and Bronn have been captured or not.
I would assume so, unless the Dothraki really hate to go swimming. It would seem logical that both Jaime and Bronn have been captured. I don't know, like, I was so worried about Bronn. I can't keep saying this enough. I was really getting antsy, and definitely feel that I think that Bronn has a better chance of surviving at this point than Jaime.
Well, I would say that, like, just the entire battle, I mean, all the major participants between Bronn, Jaime, Drogon, and Dany, you know, like, up until the very end of the episode, I was like, oh, shit, is the dragon gonna die? You know, if the dragon dies, how is she gonna fucking survive, you know, falling out of the sky? You know, Bronn, yeah, he looks like he's going to be fucking toast. Jaime looks like he's going to be fucking toast. So they did a good job. Yeah, I would say it was probably more spectacle, but just the same way that they did with Battle of the Bastards last season and keeping you guessing and who's going to win right into the very end. Well, not necessarily win, because I don't think there was any way for Jaime's forces to win, but whether or not, you know, somebody significant was going to be lost from Danny's side, I should say.
I just want to go on a quick tangent to say that I looked on IMDb. Battle of the Bastards is the highest rated episode, and that episode does not take enough shit or flack for how poor some of the CGI was during the battle scene. Like, I don't know why that gets overlooked, but every movie that comes out that has some CGI, a handful of mistakes, gets ripped to shreds, so... People, call it like it is. Stop showing favoritism. Just want to say that they refer to the ballista, the scorpion, right?
Yeah, they called it a scorpion, which it was, you know, a particular type of ballista that was aimable and, you know, fired.
How many ballistas or scorpions do you think it's going to take down a dragon? And beyond that question, do you actually think we're going to see the death of a dragon before the end of the franchise?
I do. I'll stick with what, you know, Raylene and I said in the first one, and yeah, probably at least one is going down, but at this point, shit, I mean, he hit him with a direct fucking shot, and it only penetrated, what, a foot or two into his shoulder? I mean, obviously it hurt him, but maybe if they roll up to King's Landing and, like, every single fucking tower in the city has a fucking ballista on them, yeah, then they'd be like, okay, time to stroll back and let the Dothraki handle this one, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to make one of my famous 180s and change course and say that I no longer think that a dragon's going to die. I thought for sure that we were going to get the death of two dragons, and now I'm completely backpedaling and saying that I think no dragons are going to die based on... it seems like if one was going to die, it was going to happen during this battle, because once you unveil the weapon, like, that's the best time to do the major destruction, and it wasn't major destruction in the least bit. It was just like, hey, we have this, and it didn't do much. It just kind of stalled things, so I don't know. I still have faith in Qyburn, but his days are numbered, unfortunately.
The little tail flick after the dragon landed and set it on fire, and then it was burning, and he just went, and completely destroyed the rest of it. It was fucking awesome.
That was great. I asked this on the blog. Did Jaime make the right decision to try to take down Daenerys when he did?
Oh, of course not. It was a fucking stupid decision based on emotion, desperation, and, you know, going all the way back to season one, not wanting to be known only for stabbing a king in the back. Yeah, rather, let me make a name for myself by, you know, ending the fucking war against of the Seven Kingdoms by killing Daenerys Stormborn.
See, I thought he did the right thing. And I know I'm in the vast minority. People probably are sitting here thinking that I'm a fucking idiot. That's okay. But I think he made the right choice. At that point in time, he knows his army is lost. But he knows that he has one chance to possibly help out his side, especially his sister, Wyn. And he takes the opportunity, no matter how low percentage, but even if your percentage is 5% versus getting captured and probably dying anyways, I just think it's the most reasonable thing to do. Is he's not going to escape. Like, if they want him, they will capture him. So his option was to go take the shot. And I know a lot of people are like, but the dragon saw him. I get that, but once again, it's a small percentage, but the other options were no better. So I say you take the chance to kill off Daenerys. And man, I would have thrown a party had he, you know, killed her. So I think he did the right thing. It almost got him killed, but I feel he was going to almost get killed no matter what anyway. So why not take the chance?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you believe what Bronn was saying, and I don't think he had any reason to lie, I mean, he thought that Jaime could escape if he took off at the beginning. It wasn't really that much further, and there was still the chaos going on, so potentially he could have actually escaped and not made himself either dead or a ransom demand for his sister now.
And I agreed with that until I rewatched it, and I thought about it. I was like, well, Tyrion was keeping an eye on Jaime. So while Bronn was right in theory, like, I feel that had Jaime tried escaping, it brings into question, would Tyrion have been like, hey guys, go get him, or would Tyrion have kept his mouth shut? What do you think about that?
I have a feeling Tyrion probably would have kept his mouth shut. So, you know, call it what you will, but, I mean, already having heard the Dothraki talk shit about his family's fucking warriors as they're getting fucking roasted alive by dragons, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, the Dothraki were kind of dicks there. It's like, guys, you're aware that... I mean, granted, they would have won, but you were outnumbering them and you had a fucking dragon. Like, now was really not the time to be braggadocious. Like, there's no reason to brag at that point. You just had numbers and a dragon. It wasn't a 100-on-100 fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it wasn't like you were the Spartans fucking holding off the Persians and being able to say, hey, look at what we can fucking do.
I mean, exactly.
Pretty much the very fucking opposite of that. So,
so next episode, it almost seems like a guarantee that we're finally going to get to see a Tyrion and Jaime scene, which we haven't seen since, what, season 3 or 4?
Season 4, yeah.
So I'm excited for that. How do you... Do you think... do we know anything about Dakan or Father Tarly there? I can't think of his name.
Fucking pretty sure dead Tarly right now at this point. So,
do you think both Tarlys died? Do you think one's alive?
I'm gonna assume they're both probably still alive, at least so they have someone to deal with next episode, rather than her just talking to all the common troops.
It'd be a face to talk to that we as fans know.
Exactly. Plus, I mean, that also has relationships to Sam, so who would know what, you know, if there's going to be another interaction down the road at that point. Shit, I'm trying to remember what his fucking name is now. You got me.
And because by and large, they've only referred to him as Lord, and I feel like they may have mentioned his name like once or twice. It wasn't that very often. I don't think it was at the very least. But I'm sure both you and I are trying to look it up right now. Randall. How could I forget Randall? That's such a good name.
How could you forget it?
I'm a big fan of Randall Flagg. Like, he's one of my favorite characters in the history of ever. So any character with the name Randall, I'm a huge fan of. So really dropping the ball here. I blame you. It's just easier that way.
Okay.
Accept it. Just accept it. Just like Sansa's going to accept Littlefinger. Hopefully.
Oh, or maybe she's looking for Big Fingers after Ramsay.
Oh, shit. What else? If you had to say what the important development could be for next episode, where do you think the important development may lie?
I think the big thing to drag away is, like, episode 3, it seemed like Cersei was in command. She had just taken over almost the entire board, and this episode puts them back onto an even footing. There seemed to be a little more equality in the discussions between Jon and Dany, and we have all of the other surviving full Stark children in Winterfell for the first time since the very first episode of the show. So,
yeah, I'm thinking next week we'll either get the Theon rescue attempt, or more than likely it seems like the Wildlings may get some action. I don't think they're going to try to put too much action into any one episode, and I'm going to guess maybe next week will be where the Wildlings get to their shine on, so to speak. I'm hoping, and then I'm going to guess Theon the week after, but I mean, Theon's attempt may not be action-packed in the least bit. It might just be Euron just, like, pissing on his face and laughing at it, and Theon's like, I'm sorry.
I think next week we'll get some time with the Hound and the Brotherhood Without Banners.
Do you think are they potentially heading to where the Wildlings are? Is that geographically possible?
They could be. I think we could also definitely get some shit on what's going on with Grey Worm and the rest of the Unsullied and Casterly Rock, since we didn't see anything with them this week. And I think we will see the Wildlings, but I don't think we'll see the fight between them and the White Walkers yet. I think it'll maybe just be an update on what's going on with them.
I could see it actually ending with the cliffhanger of Tormund seeing the White Walkers coming their way and seeing his expression, and then roll credits, because that's what TV shows do.
And I think we'll also see a little bit of Sam, since we didn't see him this week, and possibly Jorah catching up to his Khaleesi.
Jorah, I would bank on it at the very least, because I hope that they don't dick around and go too many episodes without updating us on his story, even if it's one thing Game of Thrones doesn't like to do too often, it bugs the shit out of me. I'd be much happier if they would, every once in a while, just take a minute or two and just show us, like, what somebody's doing, instead of going 3 episodes and then be like, oh, in case you forgot, here's this guy. Just give me a minute or 2 updates. I'm cool with that. Just let me see that Jorah's getting a ride on a horse, and he's, you know, someplace, and saw the aftermath of, like, what happened on the battlefield. I'd be fine with that. Something of that nature would be fine. Just updates. Hound seems like a must. The other thing, damn it, they gotta move on. I don't know. I feel like I'm getting impatient with the Littlefinger storyline, only because I'm just really curious to see where it goes. And anticipation's fine, it's cool as shit, I can't complain, but simultaneously, I just want to know where... If I had one thing that I want to know, it's where the Littlefinger whole thing goes. That's what intrigues me the most, oddly enough. Anything intrigue you more than anything else in this?
You know, I'm just happy to be seeing, you know, shit I've been waiting to see for 7+ years now since the last book came out, and actually seeing it done well. You know, one of my biggest fears when they first started doing that was he wasn't going to finish the books and they were going to catch up to him, and then it would end up being not that good, and I was a little bit worried about that, but truthfully, I think they're doing a better job than he could be if he kept writing them, so kudos.
Sad to report that, you know, for those not keeping track, we only have a whopping 3 episodes remaining, and then it's done.
We got 4 this year, and then 7 next year, or next season.
Do we? I thought we were only getting like 5 or 6 next season.
They were saying, it could have gone down, but they were saying before this season started filming that it was going to be 8 episodes for season 7 and 7 episodes for season 8. So, I mean, we should be getting at least 4 more. So we're hit the exact halfway point of the season with this last episode.
I've seen conflicting things. I think there's only 7 episodes this season. I've had that on good authority on a couple of places that seem awfully legit. I'm really confused because some places are saying 8 episodes, some are saying 7 episodes. Has there been any legit confirmations from HBO or the creators that there's 7 or 8 episodes that you know of? Because I'm very confused.
All right, now they're saying 7 on IMDb, so 7. So, okay, we've passed the halfway point.
This was the halfway point. Last night was the halfway point, and so it seems like we're getting 7 this season and maybe 6 or 7 next season, because originally I heard 13 episodes, possibly 14. 7 and 7 would make a lot of sense, unfortunately.
Looks like 7 and 6.
Ah, boo. In all honesty, would you rather split this up, or would you rather just have the 13 episodes this season so everybody could move on?
Let them split it up like they did, otherwise we would be getting shit for the budget.
Fair enough. And HBO knows that they're going to get subscribers, you know, for at least 2 months because of this.
Yeah, definitely.
That sucks. 3 more episodes. On the plus side, that will be over on the 27th. Actually, that kind of sucks. I don't know how I'm going to do this, because I owe a payment on the 22nd, and the last episode is the 27th. I was thinking about canceling my HBO. I don't really want to pay $15 for one more episode. That kind of seems a tad ridiculous, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but...
yeah, I don't know. I'm probably going to tell Raylene to sign up for a free trial so we get the last week, and then she can cancel it. I think that's the best way to go about it, because... I mean, it is. I'm not going to say that the last episode isn't worth $15. I'm sure it actually will be very much worth $15. But if we could just cancel and then get a free trial for that one episode, I would feel a lot better. Because $15 could buy the pizza that I eat during that episode. And there pizza's important.
Pizza. You go.
You know. So... We have all of that stuff out of the way. Let's see, by next week when we're doing this, we'll be finishing off with the Rob Zombie Films blog. I think Annabelle 2 comes out this week or next week, something like that. Is there anything in horror that's caught your eye recently that you want to chat about, since we usually end it on some horror talk?
Annabelle 2 looks like it's actually going to be pretty decent, so I'm hoping that turns out well. I won't see it in the theater. That's definitely something you'll see when it comes to video, but I'm hoping that makes up for what the first Annabelle was?
The first one was really bad, so I'm cautiously optimistic that this will be at least an improvement. Last I knew, I'm actually going to the theater to see it. Not necessarily by choice, but hey, if somebody's going to pay for me, or at least pay for the ticket, and I just pay for the popcorn, I will accompany them. Otherwise, I'm not going to go.
Have you seen anything about that Mother coming out? The one with J-Law?
No. Mother? Has Javier Bardem, so that intrigues me, but God, I just don't like her. Ooh, Darren Aronofsky's directing. I will go see it.
Yeah, I just saw they have like a preview trailer. It's only like 30 seconds long, and the actual trailer is supposed to drop tomorrow. And that looks like it could possibly potentially fit into the horror genre.
And Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer, but mainly Ed Harris is one of those guys that I will watch him in anything and think that he did a good job, by and large. He never half-asses it, I don't think.
Hey, I'm trying to think of a Ed Harris movie where he half-asses it. I can't come up with one off the top of my head.
See, like, I mean, between him and Javier, that should be a good tandem. And Michelle Pfeiffer is not bad at all. Jennifer Lawrence has potential to be good, and if anybody can get her to be good, Darren Aronofsky is one of the best directors out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's really good. I think she's good. I think the problem with her was that she blew up too fast. You know, the same kind of thing where you go from doing something like Winter's Bone, which is really good, to just doing fucking everything, and all of a sudden, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're going to be in so many things, something's going to fail.
Alright, so here's my gripe, and I don't care if anybody agrees with me or not. My biggest gripe was last year, I think it was, when she was openly griping that she didn't feel she was getting paid enough. And my thing with that is, her success, she did make a name for herself with Winter's Bone, which was a great performance and a great movie. She then got selected to do Hunger Games, and she also got the X-Men franchise. If she was just doing movies based on her name quality after Winter's Bone and made successes, I would say that that's cool, make whatever. But you can't sit there and say that you're worth this much because you happen to be part of two of the biggest franchises going on in that decade. That doesn't make you good. That just means that you kind of lucked into two really big roles. And it pissed me off how cocky and arrogant she got over it. So that's my beef with Jennifer Lawrence for people who want to defend her. That's my beef. If you don't agree with me, neat.
See, the problem I have when people use movie stars to talk about equality in wage earnings between the sexes is the fact that there's no like standard. You know, you have somebody like Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks, whose millions typically make, you know, like hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, able to make $50 million a movie. And yet you have somebody like Christian Bale, who after the Dark Knight movies, you know, the three of them is able to justify the same price. And then you have, you know, it's such a wide thing. You know, it's not like you can look at it like you can at like businesses or corporations where, you know, okay, CEO of this company makes so much money, then the CEO of a similar company should be making relatively the same. You know, or even, you know, something like along the lines of where I work at, you know, where like everybody who has this position makes the same amount of money. Yeah, if there's an inequality there, it's really easy to see. But, you know, you can't look at like a movie and say, okay, well, this movie did this amount of dollars, that movie did that amount of dollars, the same people, the people should be making the same amount of money. And so, yeah, when people make complaints like that, it's really easy to see. You know, or it's, I should say it's hard to see, you know, what the right answer is. Yes, obviously, gender inequality is a thing that exists. I mean, look at, like, some of the franchise TV shows where, you know, it wasn't one name carrying it. You know, it was eight names carrying it, and the four men are making 16 times as much as the four women who all have equal parts. That's really easy to point to and say, okay, here's a gender gap. Doing something like what she's doing, how can you, when there's, like, no fucking set rate for anything. How can you point to it and say, I should be making more, I should be making less? Obviously, if you're making, you know, $1 million off a $450 million pick, and your co-star is making $50 million off the same pick, there's a big fucking gap there. But who can say if I'm making $9 million off like a $100 million pick and I'm making $6 million off a $75 million pick, where's the difference, you know, in that kind of shit?
Oh, I agree. And I want to even go on record, and, you know, any women listening, you may not appreciate this, but I gotta say it. From my point of view, the way that movies are written, women are more replaceable than men, which is why I feel that women don't get the pay that they deserve, because most top female roles in top films today that aren't chick flicks, and probably even for chick flicks, but I just can't speak for them, you can easily make an argument that main chick A and B could easily be replaced by 20 other women and it wouldn't miss a beat, whereas there's a lot of male roles where if you replace them, it's going to royally affect the movie, and it's the way that the characters are written. It has nothing to do with the women's abilities, it's just that their characters can be played by so many top actresses. I really feel that makes a huge difference. Maybe I'm wrong, but I truly, like, when I see a preview for a movie and I see certain names, there are some names of women, like Katie Sagal, whatever her name is, Peg Bundy. I will watch her in anything. But the list of women that I actually care to see, like, must see, are very little. Where guys, because they've been getting better roles, yeah, I do care more about, you know, whose name is attached to what. I don't know. I mean, do you see where I'm coming from? At least, like, the writing has a huge part in this.
I don't want to get involved in this conversation. There is no way to recover from what you just said. So, women, I apologize for Kent. I understand.
Oh, I don't. I'm a misogynist. Don't care. But if you don't want to touch
it. I mean, that leads back into the circular argument that why are women not getting the roles written for them? And, you know, all I can say is that I hope years down the road, because I'm a big believer in equality, and that means that everybody should have the equal chance to succeed. Everybody should have the equal chance to fail. It just doesn't mean that, okay, I've been oppressed for years, now I'm going to automatically gain successes over and over and over again. No, you still have the equal chance to fail. But I just hope that years down the road, someday, probably when aliens appear, so we're no longer worried about the differences among humans, and now we're looking at differences among actual species, we can look back on this and be like, God, that was a shitty time in the world. Everybody makes the same amount of money. Everybody has the same opportunities. There you go. Everybody gets the same great parts written for them. Everybody gets the same chance to be a character actor or a lead actor or actress. I mean, that's one of the things that I'm seeing now is that, you know, actress is no longer used as a term. It's just actors.
I agree that everybody deserves equal opportunity. All I'm saying is the reality is that parts are not written equally. I don't see how. It's the way that it is right now, and the market doesn't lie. Hopefully the market changes. I would honestly, personally, love to see a bunch more women that I actually want to be like, hey, I want to must see it because she's in it. Unfortunately, that's just not the case. And it could very well be the genres of movies where women excel in. I don't know. I can't vouch for that. I mean, I watch a lot of horror. Let's face it. Women are incredibly interchangeable because the vast majority of women characters are written to scream, cry, and somebody eventually overcomes all evil. That's horror genre in a nutshell. I didn't create it. I'm just relaying the message. Action movies. Let's face it, women are not treated very well in action films, by and large. It's the way it's written. I don't know. And until writers come along and actually write better parts, we're going to be stuck in this cycle that we've been involved in for however long. I mean, look how long it was that black people, like black actors, like you can name a few, and then it was like, oh, well, we need a black guy. Well, here's four guys. Well, what if we don't want to use Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman, so on and so forth? I hope, it seems like they're opening up more roles. Hopefully that happens all across the board. I'd be very happy if it did. But the reality is, right now, it's still a very slow process. And as a matter of fact, we're probably devolving a bit if Facebook and social media is any indication of what's really going on. We're living like in this weird cesspool where we have devolved. So, just saying, do you know anything more about this Mother film?
Not really. I mean, I just saw the trailer for the first time the other day. Looks interesting, and yeah, Darren Aronofsky has made some great films. Darren Aronofsky has made some weird shit, so I'll be interested in seeing what the actual premise of the thing is about once the trailer drops tomorrow.
I really liked, Requiem for a Dream is by far his standout for me, but Black Swan was also possibly one of my favorite films of that year entirely. Really liked it, and I liked Pi. I never saw The Fountain.
I wasn't a big fan of Black Swan. It just didn't appeal to me. I mean, I could see, you know, what people liked about it, but sitting through that was just kind of boring for me. I didn't see The Fountain either, so.
Did you see The Wrestler?
I did not, no.
Fantastic movie. And what's good, I'm incredibly biased being a wrestling fan, but I'd like to think that even if I wasn't a wrestling fan, I would still think it was a fantastically done film. So, anybody that hasn't seen it, I highly recommend it, but it's probably not for everybody. Also, it appears that he was an executive producer for The Fighter. I did not know that. I liked that movie. Did you ever see it?
Trying to remember which one that was.
Had Wahlberg and Bale.
Oh, I never saw Noah either, so.
I never saw Noah. It didn't get the best reviews, which bummed me out because I like Russell Crowe a lot, but it really wasn't a topic that I cared about either, I guess, so I avoided it. I'm looking through like all of his stuff that he's done, and The Fountain seems like the movie that I missed that I'd want to see more than any of the others, because a lot of his stuff is shorts early on. So hopefully, any other horror movie stuff you want to tackle before we get on out of here?
Shit, I'm trying to remember. Anything new that you've seen coming out?
All I can say that I've seen quite a few different trailers for the new remake of Stephen King's It, and I'm trying not to prejudge it, but it's doing what modern horror does with remakes, for better or worse. It has a very sophisticated feel to it, and it's going to feel very different from the original, because the original was a made-for-ABC miniseries. So if people can't get over the fact that it's going to look and feel different right from the get-go, they probably aren't going to be able to get over that feeling. I think that's a fair thing to say. Like, I don't know. As long as you can be open-minded about it, I think it's going to be an okay film. I'm not expecting the guy to be as good as Tim Curry. I don't think anybody is. I'm going to give the guy a chance. I gave Jackie Earle Haley a chance at Freddy Krueger, and I thought he did a fine job. He just couldn't replace Robert Englund.
Yeah, it was, you know, an iconic role trying to shove somebody into it. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the actor playing Pennywise in it. It does look like they're, again, going with... and this is it still split into two movies?
Last I knew, it would be, but
Okay, because I was going to say, this one, all the shit I've seen from this one so far seems to be just the childhood stuff, which would make sense if they're splitting it at that point, you know, between childhood and adulthood. We'll have to see. I mean, that's, again, it's probably one I won't go to see in the theater. Jigsaw actually looked like it was going to be pretty good when I saw the trailer for that, so that's one I'm looking forward to.
I am cautiously optimistic, and that's all I can really say. Like, the trailer didn't look too bad, but part 6 and part 7 of that franchise were not very good, and I'm probably the biggest Saw fan that anybody knows, but I have to acknowledge it, part 6 and 7 were not that great. So if we can get something that's even as good as like part 4, I'd be really thrilled with that. I'd be really happy. So fingers crossed that maybe the break that they took had an effect. I don't believe that, I can't think of his name, the guy who started the whole franchise, I don't think he's involved with it at all.
Shit, which one are you talking about?
He went on to do like the Fast and Furious movies.
Okay, you're talking about the guy who directed it rather than the guy who wrote it. James Wan.
Yes, there you go. I don't think he's involved at all with this, which may be for the best. Maybe they'll go try to take a different look at it. I don't know. It's all speculation until I see it. I'm hopeful. That I think that's the best anybody can be at this point. I don't really sit there and look at movies and say it's a must-see. I'm just like, I'm hopeful that I'm going to enjoy it when I eventually do see it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, especially like when I take my whole family to the movies now, it's like fucking $100. So even just going myself, I'm still dropping, you know, $30, $40. It better be fucking worth sitting there spending that money to see it rather than just, it was okay.
Oh, that's how I felt when I saw Don't Breathe. I was so irritated with spending money. I mean, I spent probably about $20 between the ticket, bought a soda, bought a popcorn. That's about $20 around here. It's probably more expensive in other areas, depending on how good quality theater you're at. With that being said, that movie experience was not worth no $20. And that's why I just don't go to the theater all that often, unless I have a good inkling that's a home run. Like, I feel it's okay to go see Star Wars. I don't feel like I'm going to feel like I wasted my money.
No, you know, the way I look at it now is the ones that are really worth going to see in the theater are the ones where you're not going to be able to replicate the special effects in any kind of home theater system. So the huge blockbusters with the over-the-top shit, like when Avatar 2 comes out, that'll definitely be one that you'll probably want to have to see in the theater, because whatever new technology James Cameron will be using when he's filming this one, you know, whether it's something new to do with IMAX or new 3D or 4K or whatever shit that's going on, is going to be worth seeing in the theater when that comes out. You know, you're usually probably not going to go wrong too badly with seeing a big superhero movie in a theater or a big sci-fi movie in a theater. But horror, for the most part, lends itself as a genre just as well to smaller systems, the more intimate stuff. I mean, shit, I can make it darker in my living room than I ever can in a theater by turning off all the lights and shutting the blinds and shit and scare the fuck out of myself doing that. So,
I horror, and first of all, I want to say how much I really hate Avatar, and actually, that's really all I want to say. I really disliked that movie, and I really wanted to like it, and it bored the absolute piss out of me, which saddened me. But with that being said, it almost feels like the horror films that make it to the theater tend to be far more disappointing than a shitty film that you just throw on that's on Netflix. Like, you know what I mean? Like, look, think about like the past year or two of horror movies that made it to the theater. How many of them were any good?
I would say probably a bunch. I mean, I know you just don't like some of them, but like, for example, I liked Lights Out, I liked It Follows. Don't Breathe wasn't great, but I think that was mostly because of how hyped up it got beforehand. But then you had, like, The Witch, which was really good.
Did The Witch get theatrical release? Because yes. I don't think it did around here.
It
so.
Did. It came out limited originally, and then when it was nominated for all the Oscars, they re-released it wide.
And that was a film that I absolutely think deserved it. But, you know, to counter the films that you said, there's also Ouija and the second Ouija, The Gallows. So it's very hit and miss. I can't vouch for Lights Out. That's one of the films that at this point, there's no sense of me watching it. I'm waiting until October.
Yeah. But I mean, think about it for like, yeah, all of those. Then you also have two like, Sinister. You have, Insidious, the first one. You have, what was the fucking, the one that led to Annabelle?
Oh, The Conjuring. The Conjuring, which both Conjuring of those too. Were yeah. great.
Yeah, I actually, both. I think the Witch, or not The Witch, The Nun, I think that's going to be a better spinoff than Annabelle was. So,
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think The Nun has a lot of potential to be great. I never saw Sinister 2. That's actually on my October list.
Sinister 2 was, again, it was one of those movies that wasn't bad, but the first one was so good that it just couldn't compete with the...
With the original. Well, because, yeah. I mean, Ethan Hawke is one of those criminally underrated dudes in movies, I think. I don't know. Without Ethan Hawke, he wasn't in it at all, right?
Yeah, he wasn't in it at all because he's dead. So, I mean...
Right. Spoilers. I wonder if there'd be flashbacks or something of that nature. I mean, John Kramer in the Saw franchise has been dead since part 3. So I feel that asking that question was reasonable, all things considering. what else? The Purge. The Purge gets theatrical releases, and those are very hit or miss. I mean, there's only been 3, but I still feel the first one was actually the worst, and the second one was the best, and the third one was somewhere in between. But I still feel that... For the amount of horror that we do get in the theater, I feel way too much stuff that's not great. I wish more great horror would make it to the big screen, is more, I guess, my thought process. There's a lot of great horror out there that we just doesn't get theatrical.
I think part of the problem is that the scarier stuff that we tend to see coming out new is stuff that kind of... hits its own themes rather than the kind of regurgitated shit that we see over and over and over again in Hollywood, because that's typically what... So, like, I'm looking at a list now, and this is 2015 to 2017 horror. It Follows, Split, Crimson Peak, The Witch, Don't Breathe, Conjuring 2, Get Out, Life, Green Room, Alien Covenant, Goosebumps, The Visit. So I know some of these can have been, because like it lists Bone Tomahawk, and that, no, that didn't get a theatrical release.
Did I tell you that I just bought that Blu-ray a couple weeks ago?
Dude, that was fucking one of the shows I was like super fucking glad I fucking watched. Found out about it and watched.
True story, when I did my blog review, I think it was last year about it, I posted it and actually got a like from Mr. David Arquette.
Really?
Yeah, I was shocked. I like double checked. Like, I was trying to confirm it was actually like a legit one, not a fake one. And based on everything that was written, it sounded like it had to be legitimately from him. I was like, well, if you think about how many people really would write about Bone Tomahawk, it's like it's a movie that everybody that sees it likes it, but how many people have actually saw it?
Yeah, I mean, well, hearing about it in the first place would be the, like, Western horror movies.
Yeah, very weird, and, you know, you mentioned, like, Get Out. I forgot about Get Out. I forgot about Split, which I thought Split was an amazing film. I really liked it. Crimson Peak, on the other hand, is that really horror? Like,
oh, I mean, look at how they marketed it. That's like, I guess that's the easiest way to point it out.
The marketing truly led me to believe that it was going to be scary, and then when I watched it, it wasn't that I didn't like it. I actually liked the movie. It just, it was fantasy.
Yeah, it was a different type of movie than what you would have been led to expect.
Right. That's all it was. Like, I still liked it. I bought it on Blu-ray as well. Like, very good movie. Just, I would have liked a little more horror aspect, I guess, to it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I don't know. It feels like there isn't Chucky coming out this year in October?
Yeah, there's a new one coming out.
I believe I saw that Tiffany was also going to be in it, so that's cool. I didn't watch the last one that came out. I think it was called, like, Curse of Chucky?
I've never found Chucky scary. I looked at those movies, like, when I was a kid, or relatively younger when those started coming out, I wanted to be like, how the fuck can you guys be scared of a fucking little doll with a knife? Freddy scared the shit out of me, again, like, to go back to what we were talking about in the blog when you wrote it, you know, my parents didn't let me watch it, so it was just something I imagined, you know, this dude who could jump into my dreams and kill me whenever he wanted to. So that scared the shit out of me. The whole idea of going to bed and waking up with a fucking face hugger on my face and having an alien embryo implanted in my chest and there was no way that people could remove it, that scared the shit out of me.
That's great.
I used to sleep with the fucking sheets over my nose, so the face hugger couldn't get me. But the whole idea of like a little fucking doll with a knife chasing after me, I was like, I would kick the shit out of that fucking doll.
Find any of the doll films, like, because there's multiple, like, creepy doll films, like, have you ever found any of them to be remotely scary? I found a couple to be creepy, none that I could think off the top of my head,
The very first Puppet Master was a little bit creepy, because, like, they went pretty original with some of the doll designs, and, like, it was also just a little creepy to watch, too, as a kid, because, like, some of the pseudo-sexual, like, shit that Full Moon used to pull. So, like, when the guy's tied up in bed with the blindfold on and the little chick puppet's, like, rubbing on him and then she starts spitting leeches on him, I was like, that's kind of creepy for, like, a young kid to watch, so.
I've never watched, I think I may have watched the first Puppet Master and I never watched any more. It's, like, one of the few franchises I never got into. Did you watch the whole franchise and is it worth my time, would you say?
Like, to go back to that one question you asked in one of the blogs, I forgot where, like, the series changed over time. You know, like, the first couple Puppet Masters, the puppets were the bad guys. They were going through killing people because, I don't remember if they were possessed or they were trying to bring back the dude and his wife or something. And then, as you went on, no, the guy was rebelling against the Nazis and the puppets were, you know, back in the 40s and the puppets were helping him get his revenge. And then, you know, like Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys, the puppets were protecting the people from demons, and then, you know, Puppet Master 5 and Puppet Master 6, they ran with that, so now the puppets are good guys protecting people from little miniature demons that are trying to come kill them. It was fucking weird. But then again, Full Moon was like one of those B-movie studios who was willing to go all out in the shit that they believed in, like Trancers and Puppet Master and fucking subspecies.
Was Dollman, right?
Yeah, Dollman. You know, Tim Thomerson was fucking awesome in most of those movies. I mean, in a lot of them, you know, like, for example, Subspecies, the vampire one, like the guy who played the bad vampire who got into like all these TNA scenes with the chicks, I'm pretty sure he was also either the director or the producer of the films. So, I mean, that was ways for them to get around shit back in the 80s. At the same time, they had some really kind of interesting stuff. So it's kind of like trauma movies. If you get a taste for it, you can go back and watch it and enjoy it. If you're not, don't like one, you're probably not going to like most of them.
All right. I have another question that I feel a lot of people would have a lot of different responses for. So I feel hopefully you and I wouldn't have the same response. What is the biggest name horror franchise that you just don't find the appeal in, or you don't like it, whatever, you don't care, you either don't watch or you don't like it, whatever? What's the biggest name franchise in horror?
Probably for me, Friday the 13th. I never was really scared by Jason. I never got, you know, it seemed to me to be, for most of them, to be pretty one-dimensional. And, like I said, you know, I thought Freddy was a scarier idea. I thought Michael Myers in his original incarnation before they started fucking changing him into, like, some supernatural force, I thought he was a scarier idea and a scarier-looking kind of villain. Jason, the hockey mask, just didn't do it for me, so...
That stings, Chris, based on my Facebook profile picture being with Jason. Stings, man. But, in all reality, parts 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are all pretty much the same goddamn movie, by and large. So, it's hard to really argue. Either you love it or you hate it. I always chose Jason over Michael, and I always chose Freddy over everybody, because... Freddy was just the most imaginative thing out there for years and years and years. I'm still not sure if anything was as creative with kills as the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise was. So that always got me.
Maybe Saw, but I mean that's like a difference. It's not a monster movie so much compared to like a torture porn / revenge / whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and. I hate the term torture porn. Whoever invented torture porn, if I could find them, I would offer them $100 to fight them, because that term gets thrown around for some things that I...
Yeah, I don't agree that the first Saw was in that genre, but definitely things that came after. Like, I think some of the hostels, for example.
Yeah, I would say... What about Martyrs? I say Martyrs has to be torture porn.
Oh... I would say at least it's artistic torture porn rather than, you know, that being the whole point of it, you know, just showing the torture and, you know, having people pay to get off on that. So
it was beautiful torture porn. It really was, like, as you said, artistic. It really was. But I mean, the whole premise was like this torture thing. So I was like, you kind of, I don't know, almost felt like that's more torture porn than the Saw franchise. I go back and forth. In reality, I don't consider hardly any films torture porn. So there's that. To answer the question I asked you, I want to say the Hellraiser franchise is the one big franchise I could never get myself into. Like, I've seen a good chunk of them. I don't understand why it has such a huge appeal. It's not like Children of the Corn, where it just keeps getting made and nobody knows why because nobody watches them, but they keep getting made.
Well, they make money in direct-to-video. You know what? Yeah, that was... I didn't watch a lot of horror when I was growing up because my parents didn't let me. You know, they probably had a better idea of, like, seeing me fucking wrap my face up in fucking sheets so the face hugger wouldn't get me. They probably had a pretty good idea of what would be fucking appropriate for me to watch, so I'll give him...
Dude, that cracks me up, okay? I keep picturing you in bed with a face hugger on you. That's, like, going to be my lasting image of the night, so thank you for that.
But, so just recently I went through and I remember I watched one Hellraiser. I want to say it was maybe 4 or 5 with Eric. You know, like, we just rented one in high school and watched it. It wasn't bad. But I went through and I watched all the originals because they were on Netflix recently, and I was like, you know what, I'm going through horror renaissance for a while now, so let me watch them. And I was like, maybe it's me, maybe it's the point I'm at in my life, maybe it's the fact that, you know, having been to war and seen, like, some of the worst things that human beings do to each other, seeing, like, supernatural horror doesn't necessarily scare me anymore. But I was just like, wow, A, these didn't age very well, and B, this shit really wasn't fucking scary in the first place. So
yeah, I mean there's such a huge dedicated fan base to the Hellraiser movies, and I mean, that's cool. Like, people get different joys out of different things, so that's cool. I've just it's been one of those things that I've never derived that same kind of joy. As a matter of fact, I kind of enjoyed a good chunk of the Children of the Corn franchise despite knowing how shitty they were. I still did actually enjoy... There was one, it was like part 8 with Billy Drago, and it had so little to do with anything, but damn if it wasn't entertaining. I like Billy Drago. He's so, like, over the top.
He's creepy as fuck, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's weird, but...
I give, you know, the whole idea of that he who walks behind the rose and the kids sacrificing all the adults and everything. That was pretty interesting. You know, I think they did a better version with the original movie than Stephen King did with the short story. But yeah, it's like anything. When you start doing, like, one a year or even multiples when you don't have a good storyline and you're just trying to use the name kind of recognition. Like, same thing, I thought the first Pumpkinhead was amazing. When you started getting in Pumpkinhead 2, Pumpkinhead 3, Pumpkinhead 4, Pumpkinhead 5, Pumpkinhead 6, all of a sudden you're like, God, this sucks.
Yeah, so I have something that I have to admit, and it really shows that I was a moron as a kid. But for, like, the first year that I saw Children of the Corn, because I'd rewatch it, I loved the diner scene when everybody just gets fucking mutilated early on. I loved it, so I'd keep watching it. I had it on VHS, and I taped it when it was on Fox on, like, a Saturday afternoon. I was so dumb. I didn't understand the whole he who walks behind the rose, because I was like, there's no roses in this film. Once I finally got it, it was one of those most stupefying moments in my life where I was like, how was I that dumb? So I will publicly, openly admit to having that moment as a child, and fuck, man, that's awful. But anyway, we've been doing this for about 2 hours. Next week, I think we could probably touch on the Rob Zombie films a little bit and whatever other tangents we get going on, because I love our horror tangents. Do you have any parting thoughts before we get off here?
I was just happy as shit when I fucking got to watch this episode this morning. I was like, yes! Not necessarily because of the way that everything worked out, but I just thought it was a really solid episode, so...
Yeah, this is like one of those seasons where, you know, every other season you can sit there and point to an episode or two that was kind of lackluster or just didn't live up to the rest of the episodes. I don't have an episode this season where I'm like, nah, it was only okay. Every episode has been very good, at the very least. So it's been exciting, and yeah, I didn't know when you was going to watch it, so I didn't. You know, message you at all or anything. So, yeah. Good times. Hopefully we get three more great ones.
I woke up my wife. I'm like, did you watch Game of Thrones last night? She's like, I watched some of it, which turned out to be like 55 minutes out of, you know, 57 minutes. And so I'm like, hey, all right, get up. We're going to watch it. She's like, okay, if you get Owen up and make his breakfast, I'll watch it with you. I was like, okay, deal. So, yeah, right.
So what did you make for breakfast?
I made him a bagel with some strawberry cream cheese, some blueberries, and shit, what else was there? There was something else. Oh, some dried cereal to go along with it, because he's not very big on eating drinking milk with his cereal. So there you go.
See, I'm the same way in the fact that I get sick if I have cereal with milk, so I just eat all my cereal dry. Like, once or twice a year, I'll have a bowl of cereal with milk. I know the consequences. It's not like a lactose intolerance thing. It's possibly like a mixed consistency type thing. I really don't know. But, yeah, I'm totally on board with the dry cereal thing. And anytime you mention a meal, I will ask you exactly what it was, because our listeners care. Or that's my assumption. I care. Yeah, let's wrap this up, and we'll be back next week. You and I will probably do it on a Tuesday, I think.
Yeah, I work Monday next week, so probably Tuesday.
All right, so that's not going to affect anything because I don't post these until Thursday, so we'll still keep our schedule of when it's posted. We'll just be doing it on a different day of the week, and that's cool. So, for Chris, for Kent, I probably should say go to 9deuce.com and visit our freaking website, check out the blogs. Check out Are You Not Kentertained on iTunes, or it's on the website too. Check out Official 9 Deuce on Twitter, Instagram, something else on social media. I don't know. I'm really terrible at my job here. But anyways, check us out if you want to, or just message me or Chris, and we will tell you the other info. So there you go. With that being said, hope you have a great week, everybody. We'll be back next week to chat your ears off.